Show me your teeth. Show me your teeth.
Welcome to Vampire Hype, episode 19. We're back this week to discuss another episode of The Vampire Diaries, this one entitled A View to Kill, as well as some news towards the end of the show about the NBC series Dracula. There's been some casting news that especially three of us are dying to discuss, not to keep Kristen out of the conversation or anything. We'll get there. That part of the discussion, if you want to skip past the Vampire Diaries section, begins at 59 minutes and 10 seconds. Before we get into the discussion, my name is Selena, and I'm joined today by Tarek, Pamela, and Kristen. Hi, guys.
Hey.
Hi.
Thanks for joining me. I know two of you guys are up very early in the morning today to podcast, so well done, you guys.
Hopefully it doesn't affect us as bad as last week.
I listened to last week's. It was a good show. We were just talking before the podcast started about how we have a problem listening to each other podcasts when we can't respond. I sort of actually had a bit of that last week when you guys were going on about some things in the Vampire Diaries. And I was going, but no!
Me too. When I listened back, I was like, I can answer that. Guys! So I know what you're talking about.
Right. But this week, the episode that we're going to be talking about is episode 12 of season 4, A View to Kill. Before we go into the summary, just really briefly want to catch you up on the contact information, because we love getting your feedback. We love hearing what you think about the podcast, as well as about the episode of The Vampire Diaries. So please let us know what you think. You can do this in one of several ways. You can contact us on Twitter, at VampireHype. You can also find us on hypeable.com, which is hypable.com, under the podcast section. Please leave your comments in the discussion for the most recent episode. Let us move on into the discussion for The Vampire Diaries, episode 12 of season 4, A View to Kill. The episode opens with the morning after. Stefan is doing the walk of shame from Rebecca's room, except Klaus totally catches him in the act. At school, Bonnie is planning the 80s decade dance, except her dad, the new mayor, cancels it and orders her to come home for a family meeting. There, Bonnie finds that her mother has returned, and her parents decide to finally try to be responsible after all this time. But it seems like the expression magic has already given Bonnie enough power, and she hurts her mom like she was able to hurt Cole earlier before leaving them behind and running out of the house. Damon, meanwhile, is locked in the Salvatore house with Klaus while Stefan takes Rebecca to the decade dance, meaning to get the dagger from her. But Stefan realizes that she really only wants to be human, and they decide to join forces for real. Finally, Jeremy and Elena manage to actually carry out their crazy plan and kill Cole, much as I'm sure to the to the pain of Tariq and other fans.
Yes, I'm so sad.
Which obviously makes Klaus very upset and vengeful. After killing Cole, Jeremy hulks out, ripping off his shirt, because that was totally necessary, and the tattoo begins to spread. Now they've got the map to the cure, and they have 3 days to find it before Klaus escapes from the Gilbert house where Bonnie has trapped him. All together now, dun dun dun! I feel like every episode of The Vampire Diaries summary, it has to end with dun dun dun, because it ends on a cliffhanger every time.
So true.
It is so true. And there's always like 1,000 different things going on in each episode, but that's what makes it fun. That's why we like it. Okay, the first thing I wanted to talk about was the fact that, well, basically I just wanted to point out that it's a decade dance again. And I feel like I love it, but I feel like this is one of the most overused plot points in the entire series. What do you guys think?
I'm like secretly jealous of them, though.
That's true.
I love the decade dance. Like, I love the themes of them, but yeah,
there's just the so most used many plot. Of them.
Especially when you consider that it's all been in a year and they've had like 4 decade dances already.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, it would make sense if it was one a year, because then this would be the last one. I mean, like, how much longer can they carry it out? I mean, they're going to have like a 90s dance and then that's it because they're already in the O's.
That's true. I guess they could go. I guess the thing about the decade dances is that it allows for the writers to add in a little more of the characters' backstories. Like this time, we got to hear a little bit of what Stefan was doing in the 80s and how he feels like it related to his and Rebecca's feelings on life and all of that, as we'll get into a bit later. But hey, it's just, you know, it's a staple of the Vampire Diaries. They have to have some kind of either founder celebration or decade dance whenever they need to move the plot along. I just think it's funny.
The humor was kind of cute, though. I loved, just because, you know, like, I'm kind of a child of the 80s, like, late 80s. So it was, you know, just, like, all little references
the
like that.
Music.
Like, the 89 to 99 balloons, like, red balloons yeah. and stuff like that. And, you know, all the Breakfast Club and Say Anything references and stuff like that. It was just really cute. I thought it was cute for humor purposes. And this is kind of probably the first time that the audience can really relate to that. Because unless you're, like, a big fan of periods, you know, the 80s is kind of as close as you can get to the present. So... I mean, in that respect, mm-hmm. the humor probably went over a lot better in this episode for that than it has in the past.
That's true. But, and, you know, especially the music, I thought was really mm-hmm. great. Like, I was surprised by some of the songs they were allowed to use in a way. Like, they were very iconic, weren't they?
Yeah, like The Cure?
Yes, The Cure. Yeah, well played.
I really liked Rebecca's joke about how shoulder pads were like a crime against fashion in the 1800s. Now in the 80s, they've come back with a vengeance.
Right. Yeah, that was funny. One of the first things that happened in this episode. Okay, this is ridiculous. Shameless promotion of our other podcast, Talks of Camelot, for Merlin. We are watching one of the season one episodes, and it was just funny because I watched that episode, and then I watched this episode, and in both of them, there's something in the water. And yes. I just thought, it makes no sense to people that don't watch Merlin, I'm sorry, but it was just hilarious that you go from one show where they're poisoning the water to another show where they're poisoning the water. So I just wanted to point that out. It has nothing to do with anything.
Yay for making the connection.
Yay, it was just a way for me to put in the plug, really.
I'm sure there are people that listen to more than one High Bible podcast. So.
I hope so. Okay, so at this party with the all the music and the stuff, Bonnie is there alone prepping for the party. No one's come to help her out, and Cole attacks her, and she discovers that she has all this new expression magic, and she's actually, I mean, she's really powerful now. Are you guys like? Do you guys think? But she still seems like herself. So my question is: do you guys think that she's actually being taken over by this power, or is it just allowing her to be herself, but more, if that makes sense?
I feel like she's only using a little bit here and now. Like, the more magic that she uses in the interrogation room with Shane, the more that she uses, the more it takes control of her, and the more that she wants to destroy things with it if she keeps doing it too long. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it will take her over when she tries to raise Silas. She's probably going to try to raise Silas and... is she's going to die because it's too much for her.
But you think she's going to die?
I do think she's going to die. Because Kat Graham is just like, oh, just wrapped shooting Vampire Diaries. And I'm like, I think you mean that forever. And I don't know why, I just do.
Right. Well, we've talked before about how she almost lifts right out of the cast at the moment because she doesn't really have scenes with a lot of the other characters.
Yeah, and Shane just handed her that talisman that I believe it was Ketsia used to use.
Right.
The little bone thing. And so that makes, we've seen Emily's talisman, which was that little crystal back in the day, like, and we saw that Emily could take Bonnie over using that. So it makes me wonder if that's going to be, like, the way for Ketsia to kind of become Bonnie.
Yeah.
And so then we might get evil Bonnie, but it's actually Ketsia, and then in the end they end up having to kill Bonnie to get rid of Ketsia. That's kind of what I think is going to happen.
I feel like we've discussed that before, how Ketsia and Silas might come back and take over the bodies of Bonnie and Shane.
Yeah.
I don't know why that sounded like Bonnie and Clyde in my head, but that was what I was going to. But the question that I ask about the evil thing is because I feel like, I mean, I know I do a lot of Buffy comparisons on this show, but whenever, spoiler alert, a certain character turns evil, it's, oh, I feel bad because I know people are watching Buffy that are listening to this. I don't want to talk about it, but I'm not going to. Whenever that happens, that Buffy fans know what I mean, it's an event which causes this character to transform their emotions and really become consumed with hate. But it's just interesting to me because I sort of assumed earlier this year that Bonnie would be experiencing a similar thing. But to me, it feels like she's still Bonnie. Like, she's not evil. She said in this episode, I don't belong to the spirits anymore, I belong to myself. And I sort of feel like maybe you're right, Kristen, that if she does end up turning on them, it's not going to be because of her own feelings. It's going to be because she's literally going to be taken over by someone, ironically enough, another spirit.
Yeah. The way she's been dealing with the magic and all of that, the power sometimes takes over. You can see that she's not entirely there because of all the power that she's channeling at the time, but she's always been able to come back from it, whether Shane had to, like, hypno bring her back through, you know, look into my eyes kind of thing, or whether she just kind of snaps back, she's always come back. And so that's what makes me think that if we lose her, it's not going to be just because Bonnie goes evil. It's going to be because something else is forcing her to stay out. Like, Bonnie doesn't come back, you know what I mean? So, should be interesting, that's for sure.
What do you guys think about the way that her parents were behaving in this episode? Was I the only one just, like, wanting to throw something at my TV?
No, I was talking to Kristen as I was watching. I was like, oh, I hate Bonnie's dad. He's being so mean and rude. I'm just like, no.
I mean, what, these people have not been her parents for as far as we know. Like, she didn't know her mother at all. Her mother just ran away and came back last year. And her dad, pharmaceutical rep or not, is never around. She's been raised by her grandmother. And then they just come back and they're like, no, we're going to control your life now. Like, it just makes me so mad.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I've survived, like, how old are they supposed to be? Like, 17 or whatever. I've survived 17 years without you. Like, I don't need you now. And obviously not now. She's, like, perfectly capable of taking care of herself. It's almost like, I don't know, it's like the power complex. You know, like, now that they're there, they just want to rein her in. And it'll be interesting to see if they have ulterior motives. But obviously they don't have the best interests of the people she cares about at heart. So, I mean, yeah, she's going to rebel. She's not going to want to pay attention.
Also found it funny that she is the only person with two parents.
I know! Nobody else has any!
Like, poor Tyler's down to nothing, and Elena has no one, and Bonnie has both of her parents now. Like, that's kind of weird. In Mystic Falls, it's a rarity, so...
She has both, but they mean nothing to her. Isn't that funny?
Exactly. Like... Yeah.
Were you guys surprised by Abby coming back? Because I had no idea she was going to.
Oh, yeah. I totally forgot that she even existed.
Yeah, me too.
And she popped up. I was like, oh, yeah, she's alive.
I don't know if this was the writer's intention, because I don't know how angry we were actually meant to get by Bonnie's parents. But this whole storyline with her parents coming back and being so overprotective and so unwilling to listen to her at all, even if they technically had her best interest at heart, it made me a lot more sympathetic towards Bonnie. I always really want to be on Bonnie's side, but it's really hard for me sometimes because she seems very judgmental. But then when she's put in this situation where she's up against someone who is like 10 times more judgmental than her, I'm totally on her side, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Is
Agreed.
It possible that they know something about her that she doesn't know about herself? Like, could they legitimately be acting in her best interests?
I think she probably does.
Also, I don't think Bonnie knows where she got her power from.
No.
Everyone else knows that she's basically channeling the sacrifices that Shane's set up. But I don't think Bonnie knows that that's where her power is coming from.
I don't think she knows that expression magic comes from death and darkness.
Exactly. Like, as far as she knows, it's just a different kind of magic. But everyone else, including the Salvators and whatever, all know that she's channeling the deaths of these 24 people now. You know, that might be part of it. Like, maybe her mom knows that she's using these sacrifices for power, and Bonnie has no idea.
Right.
Yeah, she doesn't know that it was for the expression magic, because her mom tried telling her, you're using dark magic, and she's like, it's not dark magic, it's expression. And I'm like, same thing, you just don't know.
Expression. I still can't get over the name they gave this. It's so distracting.
Like, I'm just expressing myself.
Exactly. Just leave me alone, parents. I'm doing my expression. Such a Madonna thing to do. Right? God, Bonnie. Moving on, though, from Bonnie's storyline, because that just makes me mad. In this episode, we saw Stefan, first of all, he was very Jekyll and Hyde, I felt like, in this episode, because on one hand, he was super nice to Rebecca, but on the other hand, he was being a total jerk to Damon, especially in the scene where Damon is in the little cage that they have, or the cell, and he's standing outside with Klaus. So my question to you guys is, because I don't understand, is Stefan actually channeling the whole Ripper thing right now, or does he seriously think that it's okay for him to just act like a total whenever things don't go his way? Because I kind of feel like that's what's happening right now.
Yeah, I don't think he's actually Ripper Stefan.
But he's acting like it, though, like selectively, you know?
Right, he's like a petulant teenager at the moment where he didn't get his way and nothing is working quite how he wants it to, so he's gonna, you know, throw a temper tantrum every time somebody does something he doesn't like. And that's kind of the way I've been looking at it, is he's just really, really whiny. Because there's no real reason for him to be this pissed off. Like, he broke up with Elena. It was his idea, and it bothers me that he's treating everyone so poorly. And it's not just Damon. Like, it's also Elena, because he wants her to be just as hurt as he is. You can tell. And so it's like, all right, Stefan, all right. You know, like, I get it. You're hurt. It makes sense. But, you know, get over it.
I mean, I understand why he's so upset. And I understand why he's acting out to Damon. And it's not like Damon hasn't done, you know, much worse things in the past. I don't know. I think it's uncalled for.
Yeah, he's not Ripper Stefan, and he's still being, like, really mean, and it makes me wonder if he ever turns into Ripper Stefan again, exactly how much worse he's gonna get, and it's not gonna be pretty.
I'm not sure that's really a line anymore, though. Like, I'm really not sure, because remember last time he was Ripper Stefan, and he was still the same Stefan. He was still pretending that he didn't love Elena. He was killing a load of people, but he was still in love with Elena, and I kind of feel like in this sense, he's kind of in almost exactly the same place. Like, there's very little difference at the moment, I think, between Ripper and just Stefan.
Yeah. I think Elena's the only thing that grounds him, though. I mean, like, even if he's in that state of mind, somehow she's able to break through. So he's not as inhumane as he was, say, in the 20s when it was legitimately a huge problem. I mean, and obviously I just kind of caught up with the show, but I always kind of felt like when he was with Klaus this time, it wasn't like his choice to be Ripper. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, he was just kind of doing it because, like, it was like a way to protect Elena, and then it just kept her safe overall. I mean, like, we've all kind of come to the conclusion that anything that keeps Elena safe is, like, what's going to happen in the show. So, but the attitude is definitely there. I mean, like, he's not the Stefan that you met in season one. It was, like, really, like, thoughtful and brooding and calm. He's kind of sassy Stefan.
Yeah, sassy Stefan. But that's kind of how I feel. That's kind of was my point, is that I think compared to season one, where it really was almost like Angel with or without a soul, it was either or, very extreme. Right. I almost feel like Stefan is becoming more like Damon.
He is, yeah.
And I don't know, I don't know why, that if that's a good or a bad thing. I don't really know. I mean, I know that there are people who absolutely, absolutely love Stefan, who are sort of very disappointed in him right now. But in a way, we can't really hold him to a different standard than Damon in this way, if we can actually find a way to control his Ripper self and be more like that.
It's weird because I think, and this is, it's so weird because I'm sure people are going to disagree, but I almost kind of feel like the fact that he can be both kind of like this angel type thing, you know, and then also kind of like this makes him more human, because it's not realistic for him to be so calm all the time like he was in season one. I think it's really cool to see his progression, because you're really starting to peel back the layers and realize that, like, what you saw in the beginning is not necessarily like Stefan, because he's been through so much. It's like, it's perfectly normal for him to have both sides. Mm-hmm. So I think it almost humanizes him to see him struggle with something.
Yeah. And it's funny because, like, I'm saying, I think what he, like, a lot of Stefan right now, like, what he does really annoys me, but I'm also at the same time finding him a lot more interesting than I ever did before. Like, I like that he can annoy me that way because it makes him, as you say, more flawed and more human.
Yeah, I mean, like, it doesn't become him to be a jerk because he's supposed to be kind of this Prince Charming. But at the same time, like you said, it's just more, he's more relatable. And then on the other side, you have Damon, who, again, is like, you should not have taken him at face value because he's really changed, too. It's like, you know, they're kind of both changing, and whether it be for the better or worse, I guess we'll find out,
actually,
you know, later.
I realize that we haven't done the test on you yet, Pamela, at all.
Mm. Oh, gosh.
I guess you don't really need the test.
That sounds really scary.
Don't worry, Tariq failed. Everybody failed, actually. Nobody's passed
the test
yet.
Yeah, everyone failed,
not just
me.
So, the test...
I know I failed.
There's just one question in this test. Are you ready?
No? Okay, fine.
Stelena or Delena?
Oh, don't ask me that
you
question.
You can only... Yeah, you have to answer it.
I've been avoiding this on Twitter. I really can't decide. I mean, like, I think... You guys, you can't ask
You me have question. To!
Because, okay, here's the thing. Like, ultimately, like, I don't know. I really go back and forth. Because right now, like, it's like, obviously, like, she's more suited for Damon. But then it's like, well, if he's, like, if she's really sired, then that is all, like, for nothing. And she should really be with Stefan. Maybe she shouldn't be with either of them and just, you know, kind of do her own thing. Like, at this point right now, I don't even know if she should be with either. Can I be team undecided?
She should be with Elijah, right, Selena?
Yeah. Yeah, join my team. It's lonely over here. But, no, you can, yeah, okay, you can be undecided. We were just so hoping that you would be Selena because it's getting embarrassing.
Because, I mean, like, I really, you know, it's like such a hard question because it's like they both kind of do things that piss you off, you know, and then you're just like, oh, well, then she should obviously just be with, you know, the other person. And then, like, that person screws up. She's like, well, obviously she should just be, you know.
It's nice that you're undecided, though, because I think that's really how a lot of us feel. Like, we might fall on different sides of the triangle at different points, but I think ultimately... It's meant to be flexible. You're meant to not be sure who she should be with, I feel like, from the writer's perspective.
I guess, yeah. I mean, like, it's so weird because, like, in every other, like, big show or movie or something like that where you have, like, two different pairs, like, usually I have no problem being like, okay, yeah, no, you guys, like, this is the pairing and everything else is just no. But, I mean, with this show, I'm really, like, it confuses me so much, yeah. Which is why I've been so wishy-washy on Twitter because everybody's been asking me, like, it's so weird. I'm like, legitimately unsure. I've never been undecided in my life, you guys. Keeps me up at night.
This is why I think that Elena should turn back into a human and be Klaus's hybrid machine, and she can be a crazy hybrid lady. Instead of cats, she just has hybrids that she has to take care of. And
can you imagine?
She has cats. She can name them Stefan and Damon.
Aww.
She probably would be better off. I mean, all they do is kind of cause her... Well, she causes them a lot of grief, but...
It's true. But how about we talk about a ship that I'm sure we can all get aboard, which is, of course... Well, I hope we can, anyway, because it's, like, my new favorite thing in the world, which is Stebeka. God, I am such a, like, a shipper. Like, I just jump from ship to ship to ship. It's crazy.
You abandoned ship, too.
Completely. It's terrible.
Does that make you a shipper pirate?
Oh my god, can we say that?
You are totally a shipper.
Yes!
I love it.
I come in, I command them, I commandeer them, then I sink them, then I move on. I love it. It's the best. I shoot my cannons. It's perfect. One day
that
is actually really perfect. I feel like there should be some kind of epic fan art of this somehow.
Someone needs to make us a GIF.
Anybody, oh my gosh, please. Yes. But right now I'm sailing on the SS Stebeka, and I'm sailing strong. How about you guys? Wasn't it
I'm
the cutest?
Totally the with you. So I cool. love these two. I really, really do.
Even though, I mean, the whole him taking her to the dance was a complete ploy to get the dagger, I still thought it was the best. I just loved it so much.
Well, and as much as it was a ploy, I also think it was, well, all she's really ever wanted is to go to a dance.
I know.
She's been trying for so long. So I feel like maybe he thought, well, I can kind of, you know, take her to the dance, which is something she really wants, and maybe she'll give me what I want. Like, mm-hmm. not trying to get in her pants. He's trying to get in her boot.
Get in the dagger.
Yeah, that's like, what, you know, she said.
I think he might have had mixed motives there. I think he wanted to make her happy too. So
that is true. And she didn't she get dagger like right before the last dance that she was really excited about? Yeah, didn't Elena dagger?
Oh, I feel really bad for her too.
I know.
Yeah. Oh.
She like got so real, and then Elena's like, "Sorry, not sorry."
Poor girl just wants to go to a dance, and then the freaking mayor cancels it. I'm just like, oh, come on.
But little does she know, I mean, like, high school dances are legitimately disappointing 90% of the time.
Yeah. Unless you live in Mystic Falls, apparently.
That's true, unless you live in Mystic Falls.
Being let down by that dance is more of the human experience than going to one, Rebecca.
I know,
it's okay.
That's true. Maybe somebody should tell her that.
She's just... Rebecca's just the best, though. Like, she really is, because I feel like with her character, like, more than any of the other vampires, they manage to walk that fine line of her truly being, like, an evil killer who believes that she's better than all the humans, and still being so incredibly vulnerable and likable and believable. And it's just every moment that she has on screen, I'm just, like, I fall in love with her a little bit, because she's just so precious, you know?
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. I love Rebecca. I really do. And more so even after this episode, because it's so sweet that all she really wants is to be human and go to a dance and fall in love and have babies. Like,
exactly.
It's just cute.
Exactly. It's just adorable. It's like, oh, I really hope. And this confuses me, really, not to get off on a tangent, but in terms of the spinoff, because I really want her on the originals. But if she comes on the originals, that would mean that she didn't become human, I would assume. Because that would be weird if she was human on the originals. But she could be human if she stayed in Mystic Falls, if they do find the cure. So I'm so torn. I like, though, that in this episode, this was what we kind of spoke about at the beginning, how they kind of used the 80s to define both Stefan and Rebecca. I don't know if the simile was a tiny bit heavy-handed, but I enjoyed it anyway. Stefan told Rebecca at the dance that the 80s was a decade of love and friendship and the possibility of anything happening. And he says, as much as we both hate to admit it, we care about those things. I think more than anything, that also just proves that Stefan is in no way Ripper right now. You know, he just is so hurt. But he acknowledged, he's learning to, like, getting in touch with his feelings, you know? And doing that through Rebecca, which is one of the reasons I really enjoy the connection that they have.
I completely agree. Yeah, I mean, at times it did seem a little like, okay, I get it. Like, the 80s are, like, it was a really fun time, and all the movies, you know, expressed that really well. So it's like, I got what they were trying to say, but yeah, I know it was a little bit, like, heavy-handed, like, hitting you over the head with it, so. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I definitely agree. I love that we're getting them kind of discovering how much they are alike, and they're doing it together. Stefan, it seems like they've kind of already always known that sort of stuff, but they're kind of, at the same time, realizing that they're really, really similar, you know, and I love them together, so I'm excited.
It was also, I found it really interesting that Stefan compared Rebecca to Lexi as well, when he says, you know, this, the 80s reminded me of Lexi, she was fearless, kind of like you. And I just think, Stefan has this, like, he goes through these nice blondes sort of in a very, like, you know, it's very funny because it was Caroline who used to remind him of Lexi, wasn't it? I think it's just the hair. But I also think that it's nice because it kind of speaks to Stefan's character. And I almost feel like these people, Lexi, Rebecca, and Caroline, these are the people that make Stefan a better person. And I was almost a bit confused when he then turned around and compared his feelings around Lexi to his feelings around Elena, because in my opinion, Elena is the one who sticks out of these four. Like, she's the one who's not as fun.
No, I agree. And it, you saying the whole blonde thing just now made me think that Elena's blonde in the books. And that's really weird. Like, and I kind of like that she's not in the show now because she is the one that sticks out. Like, she does not make him a more fun person necessarily.
She really doesn't, does she?
The Stefan we saw with Elena is very intense and brooding, and while together at the very beginning when they were together, he was very endearing and sweet and, you know, cute. He didn't necessarily stay that way. Like, everything got very intense, and you know, he didn't seem to be able to take a break and relax and be fun. Whereas with everyone else, with Caroline, with Rebecca, we've seen him, like, relax and tell jokes, and even with Damon, like, be able to kind of throw a barb here and there and joke around with him. So, yeah, it's very interesting how badly Elena kind of sticks out from everyone else. So, yeah, the comparisons between Elena and Rebecca are a little weird because I don't think they really are as similar as he is trying to make them, but...
Yeah. Elena and Lexi, right?
Yeah, sorry, yeah, Elena and Lexi.
Let's not forget that awesome, awkward moment where he tried to have fun with Elena on the back of his motorcycle, and they're just woo!
She was, like, motorcycle surfing.
That was so Perks of Being a Wallflower, though.
Right.
It's so funny because that happened right after she turned, pretty much. And, like, so they're kind of setting it up for her to be a lot more carefree, you know, somebody like Rebecca or Lexi are, but she never really gets that way.
No.
She still kind of is very much like she was in human form. Kind of like a little bit like a Debbie Downer, but you can understand why.
Yeah, you know? I think that's it. Like, Elena, I personally, like, a lot of fans actually for some reason don't like Elena. I don't understand why. I think she's great. I really enjoy her character, but she's not fun. Like, she's just not. Like, she doesn't have that relaxed, carefree attitude that is, or that free spirit, I should say, that I think is common to both Caroline and Rebecca and Lexi. That's actually the thing. Like, you get characters like Elena and Bonnie, and okay, yeah, a lot of crap has happened to them. I'm not blaming them for being a little bit down on life, but they are very intense people, and I feel like you've got Elena and Bonnie sort of in one box, and then you've got the characters of Caroline and Rebecca and Lexi in a completely different box, which is the one where they can have fun. Horrible things can happen to them, but they can still turn around and get excited about parties and want to do, like, more upbeat stuff. And they all seem to cheer up Stefan in a way that, at least right now, Elena just doesn't, because it's all kind of so intense with the two of them.
It's got to be hard for Elena to be so carefree, though, when everyone she cares about keeps dying.
But then aren't they all in that situation, though? Like,
yeah.
To be fair, I know Elena probably has it the hardest out of all of them, but they all have it pretty tough. It's not all fun and decade dances and Mystic Falls.
For sure.
Yeah, but... that's true. I feel like Elena keeps blaming herself for everything. Like, she feels like if she wasn't, like, the doppelganger, then no one would, like, be in any of these problems. Because if she wasn't the doppelganger, then everyone would be safe and she'd be fine. But it's, like, it's kind of technically her fault, but it's not her fault at all because she didn't choose it. And so I feel like her carefree attitude just has to wait until, like, all the danger is gone. Because she is, like... those fun moments at the sleepovers and stuff where she's, like, really fun to be around. And, like, her doing the vampire dance on top of the table.
Yeah, that was awesome.
She has her moments, but I think she's just too scared to, like, let anyone die to be carefree at the moment.
This is why them finding the cure for her is, like, the dumbest idea in the world. Because she's a vampire now. She's not the doppelganger anymore. Her blood doesn't do anything special, technically. There's no reason for vampires to target her anymore.
Yeah, exactly. They should just not look for that court.
Dumb. But okay, it keeps the plot going, so I'll buy it. While all this Rebecca stuff was happening, Klaus was at the Salvatore house babysitting Damon and wanting dating tips for Caroline, which I thought was fantastic. Poor Klaus.
Oh, yeah.
He said something interesting, though. He said that it couldn't just be the sire bond that was causing Elena to forgive Damon for all the sins that he'd committed as easily as she keeps doing. And this led me to think of something that I noticed actually during last week's episode, but it happened again this week, which is that in the previously on, at the start of the episode, they keep showing the moment where Damon tells Elena, "You know what would make me happy? If what you actually felt for me was real." And so, Delena fans, moment of truth. We've all been sort of kind of excited about the fact that Elena does seem to feel something real for Damon and that the sire bond doesn't technically affect her feelings, but it seems to me like they're keeping the possibility disturbingly open for Elena's feelings only to, quote-unquote, be real, because the sire bond is making them real because that's what would make Damon happy?
Yeah, here's where I disagree.
Do you?
Because I feel like the reason they keep putting that in the previously on, because when you pointed it out, I kind of looked at it like, all right, I'm going to step back and kind of consider it. Like, why are they putting it in there? And I think it's because we have been getting from Elena to Damon, we keep getting all of these justifications for why her feelings are real, why she's not affected by the sire bond when it comes to how she feels for Damon. We got, you know, the whole, like, with Tyler, it affects your actions, it doesn't affect, you know, your emotions. And then we got the proof with Rebecca and the after-school special scene where she's compelled, and what is she telling them? She's telling them she didn't sleep with him because of the sire bond, she slept with him because she loves him. We get all of this evidence that she really loves him, and I think the writers are trying to remind us that the sire bond is also in effect, and so it might not be real. And to keep us from falling one way or the other, believing whether or not the sire bond is affecting her emotions or not, they're reminding us every week that it might all just be Elena's attachment to Damon that she didn't choose. She didn't choose to be bonded to him. So I think it's just them trying to keep the pot stirred and to keep it from settling to where everyone just admits that, okay, she's in love with Damon. Because that's part of the whole reason for Damon to want the cure, is that he wants Elena to take it and to prove to everyone that she really does love him and that it's not just the sire bond talking. So that's why I think they're doing it, but I do see your point. I see that, you know, it could be them trying to remind us every week that, you know, this isn't real kind of thing too.
That was so in depth and deep and amazing.
I think way too much about this.
But I just, at the same time, like, I just feel like it's so easy for the writers to just go back and say that Elena, because the whole point of the sire bond is that Elena will do, yeah, it technically doesn't affect her emotions, but it does affect the fact that something deep inside Elena will do everything to make Damon happy. Like, that's the key word, is making him happy. And because he said, "What would make me happy if what you feel for me is real?" I'm sure it's real. The question isn't whether it's real. The question is why it's real. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's definitely real what she feels for Damon. But is it only real because he can only be happy if it's real? Or is it real despite of that? Or, you know, concurrently or perpendicularly or whatever the word is. SAT score word of the day.
It's like causation versus correlation. Like,
yeah.
Is him saying that causing her to right. be real and to have real feelings? Or do they just correlate that he's saying this and she has those real feelings?
Julie Black,
I
tell us.
I know what you mean. Like, I totally understand what you mean. And it is really, really up in the air, because there's no way for us to know until one of them is human and we have the sire bond broken. Like, that's the only way we're ever going to know for sure whether it's one way or the other.
Do you think that if Damon turns human, the sire bond goes away, and or if he turns human and then turns back into a vampire, will it go away and come back, or go away forever?
If Elena doesn't?
And if Elena stays a vampire and Damon accidentally takes the cure like he's supposed to in the books, then do you think, is it based off Damon being a vampire? Would she still be sired to him?
That is a good question.
I don't think so. Because I think either one of them, it's kind of like, I kind of think of it like compulsion. If either one of them were to break, like if either one of them were to
Or die.
Right. If either one of them dies or becomes human, then it severs the connection.
Good point.
Mm. And so then that connection is then severed. So if then he becomes a vampire again, it doesn't just like reattach. Like they've been broken off from each other. So then that would be broken.
Right.
That's kind of how I think of it. I don't know technically, but that's kind of how I put it together.
Okay. I love the idea of Damon turning human, the connection shutting off, and then him turning back to a vampire. Because that way, Elena can stay into a vampire.
Some interesting lines as well that came out from Damon in the scene with Klaus that I don't know if there's any real discussion here. I just thought it was interesting to bring up because it kind of defines Damon. And it's a good little definition, especially for the haters. He said, "I don't mind being the bad guy because somebody has to fill that role and get things done." Whereas, as opposed to Klaus, he says, "You do bad things for no reason. You do them to be a dick." Klaus adds, "Debatable," but Damon says, "If you're going to be bad with purpose. Otherwise, you're just not worth forgiving." I thought that was very interesting. And I
love that line so much.
Me too. It was great. I think I even tweeted it from the Vampire Hype Twitter because I thought it was really, it was deep, you know? It was if anyone's thinking about being evil, don't. But this is a very good line.
The driving force.
Evil Handbook 101.
But the difference is, though, is like you know, like you can't just, like, Damon is, his intentions are pure, you know? You can't just tell somebody to go be evil because they hate someone.
But the thing, though, is about that, though, like, is interesting because Damon is establishing himself as a hero, anti-hero, I guess, or he's establishing
a reluctant hero.
Yeah, he's establishing himself as this really complex, heroic-ish character, whereas, as opposed to Klaus, who he's here sort of pegging as the villain. He's saying, "Look, I am evil, yes, but I have all this depth. You're evil just for no reason. You're just a, like, black and white villain." And I know this isn't the truth, but this is how it's setting it up for the Vampire Diaries. And I thought it was especially interesting in terms of how they're thinking about developing Klaus's character for the originals, because for Klaus to be the leading character in the originals, essentially, we would have to switch this around eventually. Like, you would have to have a Klaus who was being a bad guy to get things done. Like, he would have to have reasons, and we would have to, as the audience, be privy to those reasons. So I just thought that was neat. Sort of a little writing thing that they did there.
Oh, I loved that little insert of him saying debatable, because it made me just want to say, like, it got me thinking into, like, all of, like, Klaus's backstory and, like, why he's doing what he's doing. It's great. Like, just that one word sparked so many thoughts. It was perfect.
No, I totally agree, and they're totally going to have to go all Hitchcock and make him the likable, you know, what is it, likable criminal or the charming sociopath, which is kind of like what Damon's kind of become, you know? It's taken a while, but he's totally become the likable criminal, and they're going to have to do it with Klaus, because it's not, why would you watch the show?
Exactly.
So
you're going to need him to be, they're going to need to set up some kind of Stefan Damon-ish dynamic with Klaus and Elijah for the originals to work and pull people in, I think. With them
and
both
there's
being
where
deep.
You get Tatya.
Yeah!
Dun, dun, dun.
But Nina Dobrev can't be on every show, you guys. Maybe she has a sister.
No, for sure.
But speaking of the originals, actually, and speaking of what we can probably expect to see whenever, if that show ever gets picked up, is Cole revealed some backstory. He revealed that they all lived in New Orleans together before they get daggered. I'm not 100% sure we didn't already know this. Pamela, do you remember from your recent rewatch?
Oh, no. I just remember that Damon and Stefan went to New Orleans to find the girl that he was originally sired to.
But
the girl that was originally sired to him. But that would actually kind of be interesting because
this flashback
they'll probably play with, like, the voodoo witches and stuff like that if they set it in New Orleans. So that'll be really cool.
Because Colo also talked about how he used to run with witches, and some of these witches were in New Orleans. And I thought, Cole. God. Anyway, we'll get there. But I thought it was some neat little twists, and it's almost like they're already setting up for the spin-off at this point, which is kind of cool. Cole also revealed that the witches he ran with, running with witches. I see him,
like,
you know.
She runs with vampires.
Exactly.
Yeah, vampires.
Running with wolves, is that it? We get a little bit of backstory for Silas as well. The witches reveal that if Silas rises, he'll unleash hell on Earth. And Silas, no, Cole gives the line, "I happen to like Earth just the way it is." And my Buffy brain supplied, "I like people. They're like Happy Meals with legs," because that is exactly what Spike said in exactly the same situation where they were faced with an ancient demon who was awakening to release hell on Earth. This demon was called Akathla, not Silas, but it's practically the same storyline, if you guys are interested in checking that one out. We're going to get some kind of sacrifice towards the end of this. I am predicting someone's going to end up in a hell dimension. Just saying. I know that Julie Black is a Buffy fan, and I know that she puts this stuff in, and I enjoy it, but sometimes the parallels just, they're in your face.
I feel a little too perfect.
A little too. Yeah, it's a little too similar. One of you guys need to watch Buffy so we can discuss this, seriously. I feel like I'm speaking to myself whenever I go into one of these rants.
But we know that our fans have a lot of Buffy.
This is true. It's for you guys that I do this. You must leave me your comments and say that you see this too, so don't feel so alone. So my next point on the list is cue the sad music. Cole dies. I guess now we know why there's been no talk of him joining the originals.
You know, I never really thought about it, but the way that they have to kill the original when like they burn up their bodies, I'm like, do you have to burn that pretty face? I mean, really?
Because that's really the most important thing that's going on right now.
Clearly.
Like, never mind the fact that he's dying. It's like, no, just don't burn his face. I want an open casket.
Oh, God. Well, I guess they are vampires. But, I mean, I had a question, though, just in terms of being smart, in terms of the writer's side. The fact that they killed off Cole right now almost makes me think that whenever they were writing this episode, they hadn't decided on doing a spin-off yet. Because I feel like if they had any idea that they were going to do a spin-off called The Originals, they wouldn't kill off one of four possible cast members. It just seems wasteful. Because if nothing else, like, yeah, they could have gotten, and I know that that the actor can still appear in flashbacks, and maybe they just, because I've never felt particularly attached to Cole, like, I never felt like they did a lot to make his character interesting. I know Tarek disagrees, and Sonya as well, but I feel like, if nothing else, he could have come back for, like, guest appearances, you know, he could have rolled into town and, like, run with some witches and been off again.
Yeah, I kind of saw this coming. Which I know Tarek mentioned it last week. When we didn't hear about Cole coming to the originals, I kind of wondered if that was because he was going to bite it and there wasn't going to be a chance for him to. I kind of see your point where maybe they didn't know that they were going to be doing a whole nother show, but yet they gave us this New Orleans thread.
This is true, like, yes.
Like they knew what they were doing. So it's really tough. The other thing I thought about was, we also have this Silas raising the dead thing.
Oh yeah, we got a comment about that as well.
And so, with the whole, he is raising the dead, maybe Cole's not gone forever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know he was technically burnt up or whatever, but maybe there's some way for him to be restored, or I don't know.
Right.
But we know that supposedly Silas is going to raise all these sacrifices that we've had, so it's still up in the air. Maybe he could come back.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know. I wasn't really
that
upset.
It does seem like a waste, though.
It does seem like a waste. Like, I wasn't surprised either by the fact that he died, and I wasn't upset about it. You know, you guys, Elijah is my original person. Like, I don't even... Cole never stood a chance there. But maybe he will rise again. I'm not sure, but it just felt like strange move to make. But I guess they needed someone to die. But speaking of dying, though, do you think, are we ever going to get some kind of backlash from all of those vampires who would be randomly dropping or dead around the world right now? Because it must be like a fourth, or even maybe considering that Elijah probably didn't turn a lot of people, it's like close to a third of the entire population of vampires in the whole world are dying. Surely somebody will notice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like there's definitely going to be some payback for that, because you can't just kill one-fourth of all vampires who are actual people and live in society. And then, like, all these people just drop dead. Like,
we're going to just have some kind of, like, randomly in the background, like, the news will be playing. And it'll be like, yeah, so thousands of people died today, randomly.
And we kind of have proof with how fast his mark grew that there's a lot of people dead.
Uh-huh.
Like, that's proof right there. Like, there's no way you can say, well, maybe he didn't turn that many. No, his mark is done. So, yeah, there were a lot.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, it's so lucky that Jeremy felt the need to rip his shirt off so that we could see that mark, because otherwise, how would we have known? It's like he knew there was a camera watching.
My favorite part of that whole thing was that he starts screaming, like, and he rips his shirt, but then he stops screaming while it just spreads. And I'm like, either it hurts or it doesn't. Make a choice.
It was such a hulking out moment. I can't even. It was so funny. Like, could you imagine shooting that scene? And then it's like, one, two, three, rip off your shirt.
Like, well, I hope they got it in one take. Because, I know.
It's like, that's what I do whenever I'm in pain.
Rip your shirt off.
Yeah, just in case, like, a tattoo should appear that I need people to see.
It's like, definitely really, Jeremy's Jacob Black moment.
I know.
I love that, like, he takes off his shirt not knowing that they can see
exactly.
The tattoo yet.
Exactly.
And he's like, wait, you can see it?
Exactly. Like, God, Jeremy. You know, I was saying in the Facebook group that maybe it's like Stephen R. McQueen, like, was like, look, guys, I work really hard for these muscles. You need to see them. Let me show you.
Like, lumberjack status in the woods. In yeah. Asheville, and like, you got the gun show. You didn't.
I just will never get over how funny that was. It really was a Jacob Black moment.
It was.
Absolutely, 100%. But I mean, it did serve the plot, as gratuitous as it was, in just telling us that he now has this tattoo all over him that everybody can see. And it also, it's great that they've got the map now, because they've got only 3 days to find the cure, because Klaus is trapped in the Gilbert house, but he's only going to be trapped there for 3 days. Bonnie went all badass, which was awesome. So I guess this kind of puts I mean, 3 days, that can be like a season in Vampire Diaries time, but it does kind of put a time limit on this whole cure storyline, doesn't it? Like, it sort of tells me that they're going to be finding it or not finding it fairly soon.
It's really interesting, because it's this whole thing with Klaus and, like, him being so angry at Cole's death and wanting to kill all of them. It really makes me wonder how the heck he's going to transition from going from this person to where he's at emotionally to, I'm just going to go to New Orleans. You know, whatever. Screw you guys.
Yeah, it's true. Like, I'm skipping town. I'm done with you people.
Right? I guess either they're going to find it or whatever. They're going to, that cure line is going to be over with, and he's going to be like, okay, bye.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking if they find the cure and they destroy it before anyone gets to take it, then he has no reason for sticking around, because then there's no way for him to make more hybrids.
Except to kill them all in rage. I mean,
but he'll get over that, don't you think? Like,
I don't know. I mean, like, he's kind of a grudgy person.
He all he needs is for Caroline to come in and be like, "Oh, Klaus, it's okay." Like, pat his head a little bit, and he'll be fine.
Well, maybe Caroline is like, "Oh, if you leave him alone, I'll come with you to New Orleans." And
oh, yay! Aww. The hell is she anyway?
I know, right?
Just
she's probably off on some super secret vampire mission no one knows about.
This binding him up, it saves the writers having to deal with the fallout of them killing Cole straight away, but it also serves just as a character point, because it gives him a chance to calm down.
Yeah, by the way, did anyone else not know what Bonnie was getting at when she asked them to invite him into the house?
Yeah, I was so confused.
I was freaking out. I was like, why would you invite him in? So that whole scene took me by surprise, but it was very cool.
It was so funny with Klaus, by the way. He's such a child. Like, whenever he was like, "You killed my brother," and Elian was like, "But you were gonna kill your brother," and he was like, "No, I was gonna make him suffer on my terms." It's like, get over it, Klaus, for God's sakes. But then part of his character is that he is such a child, so I guess it was just consistent, really, with his storytelling. Yeah. Right. Are you guys ready to move on into listener feedback?
Yep.
Great. Yeah. Okay, Pamela, do you want to take the first one?
Sure. Ravenclaw 1991 says, "I seriously can't believe they killed Cole. I had a feeling it would happen. Part of me was expecting it not to because Elena wanted it to happen so badly. Cole was starting to grow on me. I still like Elijah more, though. The whole part between Jeremy, Elena, and Cole was pretty epic. I hated Bonnie's parents, though. I realize they're doing it to protect her, but still, I can't wait to see next week's episode. I'm really looking forward to it. I hope we see Caroline soon. I kind of miss her. And Tyler, too."
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, comment. Tyler.
I know. Well, I know. Yeah, it's like you Tyler forget too. About them so quickly.
You know, if they weren't talking about this death being so shocking, I would kind of think Tyler was the one to go.
Yeah. It just wouldn't be shocking at all if Tyler died, would it?
It wouldn't at all.
No.
It's because he's, like, almost died five exactly. times. Or, like, we thought he died, like, twice.
Exactly. Yeah. So the next comment, Kristen, this one's from Kate. Do you want to take this one? Because she kind of has the same theory as you, so it fits.
Sure. Kate says, "I loved the scene where Stefan spoke about Lexi. That's the Stefan I like. I've only ever enjoyed him when Lexi was around. He was fun when we had Lexi. And I can't help but feel sorry for Rebecca, again, as everyone tries to sneak around behind her back. And I shamelessly hold on to some hope that we could get Cole back. I believe Shane mentioned that Silas can bring back the dead, so maybe that even includes dead vampires. So here's me, crossing my fingers, begging Julie Plec to give me back Cole."
Yeah, you and I both, sister. Ugh, I want him back.
Aww.
Aww. But yeah, no, I think that's totally plausible at this point. Shane's been talking about dead people coming back. Silas is going to bring them all back. He's said it so many times now that I kind of wonder if that's possible.
Mm. I just wonder how it would be different from whenever all the ghosts came back, you know?
Yeah.
The final comment from Elise Hammond. Tarek, do you want to get that?
Sure. Elise says, "So many things, so many developments. This is one of my favorite episodes of The Vampire Diaries ever. I thought the vervain thing was kind of weird at first. I guess I've forgotten other instances where vampires used vervain to avoid original vampire compulsions. It would be kind of nice if we got a shout-out to Caroline and Tyler with a quick comment about them grieving together or something. I really enjoyed Klaus asking Damon for girl advice. I definitely did not expect Cole to be killed. I'm actually really impressed with the way all the myriad plot threads are coming together. 10 out of 10.
What did you guys think of this episode overall? Because to me, it was all right, but it definitely wasn't one of my favorites, I don't think, of the season.
I really enjoyed it. I love the Damon Klaus dynamic. And so the last couple episodes are the first time we've really gotten any sort of, like, alone time between them. And so I'm loving that. But, yeah, it's a good episode, but I don't know if it ranks among my favorites.
It was actually one of my favorites. Like, maybe, like, top five, I think. Maybe, like, the fifth favorite. But it was one of my favorites just because I didn't know how it was going to end. I was watching it. I was like, I honestly had no clue if they're going to kill off Jeremy or Cole. I was just like, which one is going to die? I was like, maybe this is the episode where someone dies that Cat Graham has been alluding to this whole time, but, like, it wasn't, obviously. So, it was really interesting, and I love episodes where you just can't figure it out, so.
Right. Okay, thank you guys so much for your comments. We really appreciate them, and we hope that you'll come back and leave them more comments, even more comments, just keep them coming for this podcast when it goes live on the site, and also for the next episode of Vampire Diaries. The show returns next week with the episode Into the Wild, which is a really good book, by the way, and movie. It's very depressing, though, but hopefully the episode won't be. Shane takes all the characters to a mysterious island, and I'm thinking Lost, so expect some connections. I can't wait.
I hope we see a polar bear.
I hope so, too. And a hatch. Oh, my gosh. Before I go off, we go off on, like, a fangirl tangent. This has nothing to do with vampires. We do have some news to go into for other vampire shows just before we wrap up this show. First, this is all brand new, so I didn't even know we would be talking about this at the start of the show, there has been a bit of new casting news for the original spinoff. They've cast one of the witches that will be a regular character on the show. Daniela Pineda, who I don't really, or Pineda, I'm not sure how you say it, but I don't really know her from anything. She has landed a regular role in the originals. She will be playing the witch, Sophie, whose magic has been silenced but not snuffed. She's a leader and a sexy, sharp-tongued social force and is quietly sowing the seeds of a revolution amongst her peers. Oh my goodness, she recently guest starred on Homeland, if anyone watches that. So, it's so cool. I'm just, every time we get a new female actress confirmed for the show, I'm always thinking, whose love interest is that going to be? This is cool. This is interesting.
Yeah, and with Haley and Klaus and Elijah and this new character, and we've already got this Marcel guy to think about too, it sounds like they've got some really interesting ideas for that new show. I'm really excited.
Yeah, me too. So the other show that we want to talk about is Dracula. There's been two new actors have been reported to join the show, and they're both from what I like to call my fandoms, because I cover them for Hypebeal. It's not just mine.
We share.
The first one, though, I just want to talk about briefly, is from Game of Thrones. The actor is called Nanso Anousi, I think, and he played Sarroso and Daxos in season 2. He was the character that Daenerys met in Carth. He'll be playing R.M. Renfield, the fiercely loyal confidant of Dracula, who is posing under the pseudonym Alan Grayson. Renfield will serve as the keeper of Dracula's deepest and darkest secrets and is the stabilizing force that allows his two personas to successfully coexist. So this is kind of cool. He's kind of like going to be like an M character, you know, if you're going to the Bond undercover kind of thing, I think.
Yeah, Daxos was the one that she locked in the
vault.
Cell thing. Yeah, in the vault. Okay. He was very, like, his role on Game of Thrones
was
really short.
Enigmatic, but I think, as an actor.
Yeah, and so I'm kind of excited to see him do more. That'll be really cool.
Mm. And the second one is Katie McGrath of Merlin! Yay! Me and Pamela will be having this discussion twice, because we'll also be discussing it tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
When we do Talks of Camelot, Hypebeal's Merlin podcast. Wink, wink, if you like Merlin.
Or if you're interested in Katie McGrath.
I mean, Katie McGrath, yeah, absolutely. Vampire fans, you'll want to know all about Morgana. So this casting news was very, I think everybody who has watched Merlin was super excited about this, including Tarek, of course, who is also a big Merlin fan.
Oh, yes, because, I'm so stoked.
Oh, yeah, because Katie McGrath, of course, played one of the lead characters, in Merlin. She played Morgana. On Dracula, she'll be playing the character Lucy Westenra, who is described, she's aristocratic London's sexy social butterfly who has a penchant for gossip, flirting, and all things glamorous. She's the best friend to Mina Murray, who is Jessica de Gau or de Gou, who is the whole reincarnated dead lover thing of Dracula's. She gradually becomes entwined in a web of lies, lust, and temptation that challenges the boundaries of their relationship. So, Pamela, she's basically Morgana reincarnated, I would say.
Oh, yeah.
There, we've
yeah,
got her.
So, does that mean we get Colin and Bradley in this?
Yes, please.
maybe we'll have those news to report next episode. One can only dream. But since we're kind of going to be repeating ourselves. Tarek, what do you think about this news?
I'm ridiculously stoked. I love it when actors of my favorite TV show when actors from my favorite shows that have ended decide to move on to different things, I'm always get really excited because it gives me a chance to staring at them on my television.
This is really cool. I think Katie McGrath is amazing. And if you guys are not familiar with her, you're just going to fall in love with her, not just because she's a phenomenal actress, but just because she's so much fun. Like, watch any interview with her, and she's a great time, and she's really fun to watch. This is the perfect role for her because she's stunning, and I almost called you Andrea. Like Selena said, it's pretty much Morgana reincarnated. So if you want a little bit of a taste of what you can expect, highly recommend watching Merlin season one. And if you do, you can join us in our Merlin rewatch.
Oh, nice. Nicely done.
Thank you.
I just think this is so fantastic because this is one of the castings that you never in a million years could have predicted. But once it happened, It just seems so perfect. Like, I always get surprised by the castings of Dracula, and it's stupid. It's because my brain hasn't computed yet that it's an NBC show, but it's set in London, so they're obviously going to find British actors. But it's like every time...
But it's so cool that they did, though.
It is.
A lot of times they don't.
Right, but it's just in my brain, like, every time they announce one of these, I'm like, but that doesn't make sense, it's an American show. But obviously, they have to find British people, because otherwise it would be weird. So, and, I mean... Katie McGrath is, as Pamela said, like, I'm so glad that she's been cast in something like this. First of all, because we already do a podcast about vampires, so we have a legitimate reason for discussing the show. But also just because she's a fantastic actress, and I think that this is just a sign that her career is taking off in a big way. And I think every single person who has ever watched Merlin can agree that that's absolutely deserved, and that she's going to go on to do fantastic things, and hopefully Dracula doesn't get cancelled before it even makes it to air, because that is still a possibility. Because
I love that you put this note about Jonathan Rhys-Meyers.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, that's where she acted with him on Tudors, and that's where she got her start, so it'll be cool to see them act for longer periods of time together, because
it will be
really great. Yeah,
it's kind of a great little reunion of sorts. And I have to say, though, if you are gonna YouTube Katie McGrath's scenes on the Tudors, you might have to make sure that you're of age, because that is a very racy show, and her role was very racy. So yeah. But no, it's cool. It's really exciting. This show, it's funny because before this casting news, I was sort of like, Dracula, it's going to be fun. I'm not really interested in the character of Dracula, and I'm sort of, I'll give it a go. Now I'm like super excited. Like, this was the casting news I was waiting for, and now I'm just all about this.
I love how it's been really dry for like all year, and all of a sudden all this news is coming out right at once. It's great.
Yeah. Well, I was like down as soon as Jonathan Rhys-Meyers got signed on for that, because he's great and we haven't seen him in a while. But and I'm so excited for like America to fall in love with Katie McGrath, because she's so awesome on like so many levels. Mm-hmm. And she really is, like, she hasn't done very much aside from Merlin and, of course, a brief stint on the Tudors. She's doing a show called Labyrinth right now, which I think is a miniseries. But
I'm
it'll
so
be really
excited
cool
to see
her.
That.
Yeah, and then it's going to be really awesome to see her just on my actual TV screen every week as soon as the show comes out. And this is, like we keep saying, is going to be a great role for her. She's really great at that kind of coy with a little bit of a secret, but you're not really sure like which side she lands on type of thing. So yeah,
very cool. Kristen, do you have anything to add? I know you're the one odd man out here who didn't watch Merlin.
Yes. Yeah, I'm glad we're getting more about Dracula. Like, I'm really excited we're learning more, we're getting more of an idea of what they're doing with it and what these other characters are going to be doing. So it all sounds really cool to me. Yeah, I was with you. I wasn't really excited because Dracula, I wasn't, like, it didn't inspire me to be really excited, but the more I hear about it, the more I'm like, okay, that's definitely something I'm going to be checking out and seeing how it is, so. Mm-hmm. Sounds cool.
Yeah, definitely. That is, that's everything we had for this episode of Vampire Hype. I hope that everybody who listened enjoyed the show. I hope everyone who recorded enjoyed the show as well. Next week, we'll be back to discuss, as I've already said, the Vampire Diaries, next week's Vampire Diaries episode, Into the Wild, as well as any news that come out about the other vampire shows we cover, which include, but are not limited to, Dracula, The Originals, True Blood, anything else. I don't even know, there's too many. I can't keep up. So be sure to check back to hypeable.com. For all of that, you can find that at hypable.com. You can also find us on Twitter at Vampire Hype. Leave us your feedback, let us know what you think, and have a good week. Bye, everybody. Bye.
Open your mouth, boy. Show me what you got. Show me what you got. Show me what you got.
Arr.
Oh, and take some water because my apple didn't help.
Mm. I'm out of apples. So sad.
Oh, no. Always keep apples handy when you podcast.
I have blueberries and that's it.
I don't think that's going to work as well. No,
I have wine. Does that work?
No.
Wine?
6:30.
It's 6 in the morning.
But, you know, it might make the conversation more interesting. So, your call. Okay, let's stop this crazy dawdling and get to serious business podcasting, everybody.